The air conditioning in that London office didn't just circulate air, it circulated judgment. It was a sterile, recycled kind of cold that seemed to seep into my bones, making me feel every bit the outsider I was. I came from Kingston with a degree, a drive that could power a small city, and a voice that people told me was too loud for a boardroom, so I learned to keep it down. I learned to wrap my Jamaican lilt in professional silk, softening the edges of my words until I sounded like someone I didn't recognize. I thought that was the price of admission. I didn't realize the real bill hadn't even arrived yet. James was the first person who didn't make me feel like I was taking up too much space. He was the creative director, the kind of white British man who carried himself with an effortless authority, like the world was just a series of rooms he was born to walk through. He had this way of leaning against my desk, ignoring the frantic pace of the office, and asking me about home. Not the tourist version, but the real thing. The heat, the salt, the way the mountains look when the rain is coming. In that refrigerated glass box of a building, his attention felt like a heat lamp. I was cold, I was lonely, and I was hungry for someone to actually see me. It started with late nights working on the Vanguard account. The cleaning crews would be circling us like vultures. The only sound, the hum of the servers and the distant squeak of a mop. We were collaborating. That was the word we used. But collaboration turned into shared coffees, which turned into shared cabs, which turned into a glass of wine at a quiet bar where no one from the firm would see us. He told me his marriage was a hollow shell, a partnership of convenience and shared mortgages. He told me I was the only thing that made the office bearable. And God help me. I believed him because I wanted to believe I was special enough to break through that British reserve. The first time it happened, it felt like a triumph, a secret rebellion against the corporate machine. But the shift in the atmosphere was instantaneous. The moment the line was crossed, the power dynamic didn't disappear. It just tightened. James didn't become my partner. He became my keeper. Suddenly, my work wasn't just work. It was a reflection of our connection. If I disagreed with him in a meeting, his eyes would turn into chips of ice. Later, in private, he'd tell me I was being difficult or unappreciative. The warmth was gone, replaced by a subtle, terrifying ownership. He started showing up at my flat, unannounced, claiming he couldn't breathe without seeing me. But his eyes would be scanning my space, checking for signs of a life he didn't control. When I tried to pull back, the comfort turned into a cage. He didn't scream. Men like James don't scream. They whisper. He'd mention how competitive the upcoming promotions were. He'd remind me that he was the one who signed off on my performance reviews. He'd comment on how hard it would be for someone on my specific visa to find another firm that paid this well. It was quiet retaliation, wrapped in the language of concern. I was trapped in a relationship that felt less like an affair and more like a hostile takeover. I remember the day I finally broke. We were in his office, the blinds drawn halfway. He wanted me to stay late again to discuss a pitch, but we both knew what that meant. I said no. I told him I couldn't do this anymore, that my soul was eroding. He looked at me, leaned back in his leather chair, and smiled. It wasn't a kind smile. It was the smile of a man who knew exactly where the leverage was. "You've done so well here," he said, his voice as smooth as expensive scotch. "It would be such a shame if the board found out about your lack of professional boundaries. A junior staffer pursuing a director? The optics are quite messy, darling. Especially for someone with your background." The implication hung in the air like a noose. He was going to frame it as me. The aggressive woman, the temptress, the one who didn't know her place. I lost the job 3 weeks later, not because of the affair. Officially, they called it restructuring. They gave me a severance package that felt like blood money and a non-disclosure agreement that tasted like ash. James didn't even look up from his tablet when I walked past his office for the last time. He had already found a new project, a new collaborator. A new way to fill his silence. I walked out of that building into the gray London drizzle, and for the first time in 2 years, I spoke in my own voice. I cursed the building, I cursed the rain, and I cursed the version of myself that thought his attention was a gift. I lost my career path, my stability, and my reputation in those circles. But the piece of myself I lost, that belief that I had to negotiate my dignity for a seat at the table, that was the most expensive thing I ever owned. I'm starting over now, not in a glass box, and not in silence, because some entanglements don't just mess up your life, they burn it down so you can see the sky again.